I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Washington State Democrats just shoved through the largest tax increase in state history, proving they have learned absolutely nothing from what got us into this mess in the first place. Also, Governor Bob Ferguson has quickly shed his cloak of moderacy, and an unexpected Washington town doubles down on DEI. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. It is a fan-funded show after all. Sign up today at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. And again, a subscription to support our content, just $5 a month. Hello, hello on this Monday, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Common sense is in short supply in Washington State, and apparently Democrats who are in control in Olympia have learned absolutely nothing about what got us into a $14 billion budget deficit, and their solution to that is just spending even more and taxing you as much as they possibly can. So yesterday was the final day of the regular legislative session. Whether there'll be a special session at some point, I'm not sure. As of right now, none has been announced. But in the final hours, after 4 long months when they could have done all this work, of course, they shoved through all the really critical stuff in the final 2 days, and they passed a $78 billion budget sent it to Bob Ferguson's desk where it awaits his approval. So here's the breakdown on what you need to know. $78 billion in spending. 8% spending growth, which is utterly insane, especially considering we spent our way from a massive surplus into a massive deficit over the course of like 5 years. They've learned nothing. And in order to pay for 8% spending growth on what all their, you know, pet projects and ideologically charged programs, they have pushed through $9.3 billion in new taxes over the next 4 years. And you will feel this. Everyone is going to feel this. Rich, poor, middle class, businesses, workers, whatever it is. So just a few, and there are many more. They've passed through dozens of either new taxes, or increased fees. Just the big ones that you need to know about. B&O tax. This, I think, is going to be the most readily sort of accessible to understand the consequences of. So the B&O tax will impact businesses big and small, and also what happens when there are increased taxes for a business. Well, if that business sells goods, produces goods, whatever it is, who are they? Are they going to eat that cost? No, they're not going to eat that cost. They're going to pass it along to you, so you can expect increased costs for basically anything that you buy. Also, we know that there will be, it's only a matter of time, increased property taxes. They've just handed local school districts increased power to push through massive property tax increases to fund local school districts. So if you're living in King County and you're a sane person living in King County, buckle up, because we know the rest of the voters in Seattle are going to approve these things and you're going to pay the price for it. Increased gas tax. We already see gas prices going up dramatically because of the Climate Commitment Act. So you can add an extra 6 cents a gallon on top of that. Increased death tax rates. So for estate taxes, if you have a loved one who dies, you're going to be paying more of a increase in taxes on what they leave behind. Of course, they have increased the capital gains tax because we knew they would. They pushed it through. It survived an effort to repeal it. So they felt emboldened. So now the capital gains tax has gone up. They've pushed through a test wealth tax that's narrow in scope. And the whole intent of it is to see if they can get it to survive a legal challenge. So they're going to do this experimental narrow wealth tax because they want to tax rich people, tax them out of the state, like Jeff Bezos went running to Florida. And then we're going to have to spend millions of dollars in taxpayer funds defending it in court. So ridiculous. And then, of course, got sales tax, Tesla tax, Discovery Pass fees went up like, what, 50%? I think from $30 to $45. Ridiculous. You ever been to one of our trails that the Discovery Pass funds? They look like shit. What are we paying for? And you might say, well, that's why we need to spend more. No, you've had plenty of money and you still don't take care of them. So what are we even paying for? And then, of course, the reparations fee that went through that we'll talk more about in a moment. So they learned literally nothing. Literally nothing. And we're going to be right back here year after year dealing with budget deficits because a lot of these taxes are going to scare businesses and wealth out of the state. And so what happens when you pass increased taxes on the wealthy in the form of capital gains tax, wealth tax, whatever it is, when you pass increased taxes on businesses, more businesses are going to leave, more wealthy people are going to leave. So the revenue coming in from those taxes is going to dwindle over time. And then they're going to come to you, middle class, working class people, and say, well, you know, we're not getting as much as we thought we'd get from increased business taxes and capital gains tax, and we're not going to cut any of the programs that we were already funding through those taxes, so we're just going to have to come to you for more money. So we're going to continuously be in this cycle of being in a budget deficit, of them passing increased taxes to dig us out of the deficit because they don't want to cut spending at all. They want to continue to fund things like laser hair removal for transgender inmates. They want to continue to fund things like paying for legal fees for illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, all of these ideologically driven things. And you're going to bear the burden of that. And until people vote differently, then they're going to continue to do what they've always done. And why wouldn't they? And again, that's why I blame politicians, number three. Number two, the voters, for continuing to put these same people back in office and then complaining about what they do. And then number one, of course, is the media, because the media is supposed to be the watchdog for all of us. The media is supposed to be telling the truth about what's happening down there. And instead, you have ideologically driven entities like the Seattle Times editorial board that's coming out with all these editorials about Democrats need a budget better. They can't push through all these new taxes. Yet they just endorsed all these people for re-election. And they'll endorse all these people for re-election again in a couple years. So the media has absolutely zero credibility. And then the media on some of these insane bills that were pushed through use the captured language of the Democratic Party. They call, instead of rent control, what do they call it? Rent stabilization. Instead of reparations, what do they call it? The Covenant Home Ownership Program. Because that's what Democrats want them to say, because that makes it sound less bad. So it's the media's fault, first and foremost. We would not be in this situation. Voters would not continue to vote the same way if they knew the true depth of absolute incompetence and irresponsibility that's happening in Olympia. And then, of course, the voters, you do bear some responsibility for this. Not you guys, of course. Not you. You know the voters I'm talking about. And then it's the politicians. Politicians are going to do what we let them get away with doing. So a couple things. Travis Couture, Representative Travis Couture, who's one of the budget leads for Republicans, he absolutely eviscerated them on the floor when this budget went to a vote.
We now will have a $78 billion budget that assumes the largest tax increases in state history. Taxes on the working class and the blue-collar folks spread across almost everywhere. The budget negligence of the past, where we once had a $15 billion surplus, but now face a $15 billion deficit, will be solved and balanced on the backs of hardworking Washingtonians. That's wrong. This budget assumes an 8% increase in reckless spending. An 8% increase in reckless spending. Taxing the joy right out of the state of Washington. This is not what Washingtonians want. We wanted a budget with no new taxes and to cut the wasteful spending. But instead, we gave more money to illegal immigrant health care and illegal immigrant legal services. And the only winners in this budget are politicians, bureaucrats, and criminals. Vote no.
Yeah, they voted yes, of course. And we'll have Representative Travis Couture joining us in a moment to talk in depth about who this budget is going to impact the most, the ways in which you're going to feel it and your family's going to feel it. I will disagree with him on one thing he said there, though. This is not what the people of Washington wanted. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. We feel so stuck. I know you guys feel so stuck. I'm not leaving, though. So what's the choice? Just continue to try to point these things out. But these people didn't just wind up in Olympia for no reason. Voters sent them there. And I know it's frustrating because you have a lot of them that represent the Seattle area and don't represent the interests of a big swath of the state. And that's really frustrating. But elections have consequences. And so here we are. So here's the question. Is fiscal hawk Bob Ferguson going to stand in the way of all this? After all, in his inaugural address, what did he say? We need to take a hard look at how we got into this budget mess in the first place and make sure it never happens again. And then twice he slapped the hands of Democrats for bringing him too much in new taxes, sent him back to the drawing board. But they still came out at the end of the session in the final hours with $9.3 billion in new taxes. So if Bob Ferguson has meant what he said ever since he took office, that we can't push through all these new taxes, then surely he'd veto this thing, right? Surely he'd veto this thing. Instead, what is he doing? He's blaming Donald Trump. Finding a way to blame Donald Trump for this whole mess that the state finds itself in. So he sent out a couple tweets about what happens from here. So the first one, he said, "We'll continue to work to ensure that we're protecting the most vulnerable in our state, as the Trump administration will doubtless continue its cuts and harmful economic policies. Maintaining our rainy day fund reserves will help us weather this storm. I am not going to allow the state that I love to be at the financial mercy of Donald Trump and Elon Musk." What are you talking about? What are you talking about? I am not going to allow the state that I love to be at the financial mercy of Donald Trump and Elon Musk. Yet it's at the financial mercy of out-of-control Democrats, your party. The budget deficit, when was it announced that we had a $14 billion budget deficit? The day after the November election, before Donald Trump took office, Jay Inslee came out and said all of a sudden, oh, we have a massive budget deficit. Of course, you wait for the day after the election because you don't want people to have consequences for the election. So nothing about the situation that we're in. This out-of-control spending started long before Donald Trump took office for his second term, and even before he was in office the first time around. Nothing about the situation we find ourselves in today can be attributed to Donald Trump or, what the hell, Elon Musk? Nothing, none of it. If anything, Elon Musk is actively trying to save us money so that we're not taxed so much at the federal level while we're taxed out of house, home, and everything else at the state level. That doesn't make any sense, Bob Ferguson. And he's like, oh, and this is true, they managed to push this budget through without tapping into the rainy day fund. And that's what he seems to be celebrating here and suggesting that we'll need that rainy day fund. Not because Democrats have never met a tax or a spending line item they don't want to push through, but because Donald Trump's tariffs and his economic policy might devastate our economy. That's mental. So then he goes on to say that we won't really know his thoughts on the budget that was sent to him for a couple weeks. He said he's going to spend a couple weeks going through it, and then he'll have some announcement of whether he's going to sign it or veto aspects of it or whatever it is. He said, I want to thank our legislators, staff, and my team for all their hard work this session as we faced a $16 billion budget shortfall. I guess it's now 16. I don't know. It deepens every day. He said, I look forward to carefully reviewing the budgets line by line over the next few weeks. When that review is complete, I will share my thoughts with the public in greater detail. Beginning with my inaugural address, I've emphasized that we must use realistic revenue projections, preserve our rainy day fund reserves, find billions of dollars in savings and efficiencies, including a $100 million grant program for more law enforcement officers, increase investment in affordable housing, and increase the percentage of our budget devoted to K-12 education. The budgets adopted by the legislature accomplished those goals. So he supports the budget. After all the hand-wringing and, oh, fiscal responsibility, he's saying he supports $9.3 billion in new taxes, the largest ever tax increase in state history, and an 8% increase in spending. He went on to say, throughout this budget process, I have also insisted that the legislature take a balanced approach to solving the $16 billion shortfall. That is why I rejected an initial proposal to raise $21 billion in taxes. I then rejected a $12 billion tax proposal as unsustainable. And now what? $9.3 billion is suddenly sustainable? $12 billion? Way out of bounds. $9.3 billion, totally sustainable. He said, I appreciate the legislature heard my concerns and dramatically reduced the revenue assumed in the final budget. That's not a dramatic reduction. $12 billion to $9.3 billion, still the largest tax increase in state history, is not a dramatic reduction. He said, that said, I intend to carefully review all revenue increases. But there's only so much that he can do at this point. He can't go through and veto out certain lines. He can veto out entire tax proposals, but then he would send the budget into disarray and he'd have to call a special session. And maybe he intends to do that. But when he says the budget adopted by the legislature accomplishes his goals, tells me he's okay with it. So here we have a guy who fooled everyone, not everyone, but a majority of voters, into believing that he was a moderate and he was going to be fiscally responsible, gets elected, says the same thing over and over, and shame on me. I even celebrated him at certain points. It was like pitting him against the governor, against legislative Democrats. I even put out a poll saying, whose side are you on, Bob Ferguson or legislative Democrats? Only come to find out they were on the same side the whole time. They were on the same team the whole time. So he's just going to sign off on all this. So Bob Ferguson, fiscal conservative, his legacy is going to be and will always be, in the eyes of those of us with common sense and see things for what they are, signing the largest tax increase in state history into law his very first year in office, also signing an illegal reparations program that will cost us millions of dollars to defend in court, likely signing rent control, which will decimate our housing market, and so many other misguided policies. So any cloak he had of moderacy has been completely shed. You can't continue on as a moderate governor. You can't continue on as a fiscal hawk, a budget hawk, after signing the largest tax increase in state history into law in your very first year in office. Give me a break. So a couple other things that happened, bills that were being debated back and forth in the final days that I want to catch you up on. So rent control has passed. It is now sitting on Governor Ferguson's desk waiting for a signature. Now, there was a lot of drama that happened over the weekend with it. I won't get too far into the weeds, but it seemed like maybe for a procedural reason, it wouldn't get across the finish line, but Democrats were able to fix that procedural problem and vote on it. So they came up with a compromise. You might recall it initially was a cap, a 7% cap on yearly rent increases. And then it changed over on the Senate side to a 10% cap plus inflation, and progressives lost their minds. And then it emerged from a conference committee, 7% cap plus inflation up to 10%. So as of right now, if this passes into law, landlords will be restricted to a 7% cap yearly on rent increases plus inflation up to 10%. So essentially a 10% cap on rent increases. Which, of course, congratulations, progressive, you have now guaranteed that every single renter in the state of Washington will see a 10% increase in their rent every single year. Because that's what you would have to do. You would have to just say, whether I need to increase your rent by 10% or not, I'm going to do it, because next year, if I need to do a 20% increase because of increased cost or whatever it is, I won't be able to do that. So it's going to be 10% every single year. So that's what progressive Democrats have done. They have guaranteed you a massive rent hike every single year that otherwise you might not have had. Now, will Bob Ferguson sign it? Probably, because again, he shed his cloak of moderacy. So if this is something that they came to a compromise on. And when I say compromise, it wasn't a compromise bill between Republicans and Democrats. It was a compromise between Democrats and progressive socialists. So they compromised amongst each other and they sent it to his desk. I don't think that he has the fortitude to veto it, even though by signing it, he will guarantee that he will not be able to accomplish one of his key campaign promises, which was to build hundreds of thousands net in new affordable housing units. Builders are going to flee the state. So if they think the rental market is bad now, just wait. I already heard, I did a live Q&A last night with subscribers. Multiple people on our live Q&A said they either have in recent days or are in the process of right now selling their rental units. And they're going to go back into the housing market. They're going to be bought by a family that's just going to live in it. And it's not going to be in the rental market, in the rental pool anymore. So that's happening right now. And it'll happen with increased urgency after Bob Ferguson puts pen to paper. I hope I'm wrong on this one. But given everything he's done in the last couple of weeks, I don't see how he doesn't sign rent control. It's absolutely outrageous. I want to play one clip from the final rent control debate, just because it's insane to me that, first of all, the whole premise of rent control doesn't make sense. It's failed everywhere it's ever been tried. So we know that rent control is a failed policy. It's not going to be any different in Washington state than it was in San Francisco, et cetera. It's going to help a few people for a short period of time. And then 5-10 years from now, it'll be like all hell broke loose. So Sean Scott, and of course, when Democrats push things like this through, it's all about race, right? All about race. We have to make up for the wrongs of the past, like the way, way distant past, by ruining people's lives today. That's what they did with the reparations bill. And they're doing it with rent control as well. And it's not only the media that will carry the water and push the narrative, but it's also, you know, there's rules on the floor during debate where you have to stick to the subject of the bill. When you stand up as a lawmaker and you make arguments for or against, you have to stick to the bill. You can't just wax poetic about societal issues unless you're a Democrat in the state house. Then House Speaker Lori Jenkins will let you stand up as a Democrat and say whatever you want to say to guilt people into supporting the bill. So here's how socialist Sean Scott characterized why they're pushing through rent control.
Madam Speaker, there was a historian named Charles A. Beard who wrote a book called The Economic Interpretation of the History of the United States, who described how the founding documents of our republic were designed in many ways to protect the interests of property holders, of landholders, and of people who trafficked in the traffic of enslaved peoples. Our state, God. Madam Speaker, is named after one of these individuals who, at the time of his death, held over 60,000 acres of land and held the property deeds to over 317 enslaved peoples of African descent. Madam Speaker, we have seen that what happens...
Please state your point.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The good member does not appear to be talking directly to the policy. Thank you.
The Speaker finds that the remarks are relevant and contextual. The point is not well taken. Please proceed.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. We have seen, especially in recent years, that what is relevant to the other Washington is relevant to this one. The long history of race and class disenfranchisement of people who do not own property is unfortunately very, very well established. In Washington state, renters experience less economic stability than their counterparts who own their housing. Renters tend to have lower rates of voter turnout, and for many years they were actually excluded from being able to join neighborhood associations. And it's unfortunate that I think renters are in many ways invisible in our public affairs. So the bill before us, Madam Speaker, is not just a material win for people who do not own property in our state, although it certainly is that. It's also a paradigm shift. The bill before us shows that we can legislate on behalf of everyday people who don't inherit lots of money or own real estate or own a lot of property or many acres of land. And when we continue to move in this direction, you and I, Madam Speaker, I believe that we can make Washington a much more fair state. And so as a result, I'm urging your strong support of the bill that's before us, House Bill 1217.
God, okay, so much to unpack there. So it's George Washington's fault we need rent control? Is that what I took from that? George Washington had too much land and owned slaves, and so that's why all these years later we need rent control statewide in Washington? Like, what are you even talking about? And at the end there, he says, this bill is important to prove that we can legislate on behalf of everyday people. Can you not be an everyday person if you own a house? Can you not? And the way he says, oh, and legislate on behalf of everyday people who don't inherit a lot of money or own a lot of land or a house. As if middle-class people don't own houses. He acts like, and this is the mentality, every person who owns a home is rich and evil. Do you own a home? Are you rich and evil? It's insane to me, but it shows the mindset, right? It's a socialist mindset, and he is a socialist, so maybe that shouldn't surprise us after all. But this idea that we have to punish property owners in order to lift up renters. We see that in so many facets of how the progressive mind thinks and the socialist mind thinks. It's not just about giving people the tools they need and the ability and the opportunity to lift themselves up. We have to push other people who have done well down. So it's not about lifting everyone up onto the same plane. It's about bringing you all down to everyone else's level. No matter how much hard work and tenacity that you've put in, blood, sweat, and tears to getting where you are in life, even if it means that you bought a modest home, which is a $500,000 home in Washington, and you saved years and years and years and years to buy it. Well, according to Representative Sean Scott, you're like an evil rich person. So none of that matters. They're going to push you down and punish you to lift other people up. And that's what this rent control debate is all about. But then again, you know, they say they want one thing and they get another through their policies and what they're pushing. And if I seem pissed off today, I am pissed off. I'm frustrated because it's so frustrating to me that people don't see this and don't see the hypocrisy as well. You know, they talk about these big conglomerate landlords, the landlords that own thousands of units, and they're just driving up rents for no reason. You know the only landlords that are going to survive this? Take a guess. What are the only landlords that are going to survive this ordeal? The big landlords with thousands of units who can afford to take a little hit. The small landlords who own one house, maybe an investment property, a duplex, the mid-sized landlords, they're the ones who are going to sell like this because they can't take that hit. Because they can't just absorb losses and essentially provide a house for someone to live in for free or at a loss. So that's the mind of the socialist fringe that has taken over policymaking in Olympia. They're not the majority, not by a long shot. But they bully and shame the other Democrats into doing what they want. Because if you don't do what we want, you're racist. You're just like George Washington might as well be a slave owner. It's just, it's insane stuff. It is not, they're not well. I hate to say that. It's just a way of thinking that makes no sense, that's not healthy, and that's just dripping with this victim mentality. Everyone's a victim. We must save them by putting other people down. Wild stuff. Also on the crazy bills that made it through this session that are waiting for a signature, maybe, from Bob Ferguson, they passed honest-to-God pay for striking workers, a gift on a silver platter to their friends in the unions who fund their political campaigns. So they passed that, although there were some changes that made it less bad, but it's still bad. I think now the max benefit that these striking workers can get through our unemployment system is 4 weeks of pay. They should get no pay. You make a decision to walk off the job. Why should we pay for that decision? The unemployment system is a safety net for people who lose their job through no fault of their own. And now those people are on the same level as individuals who walk out by choice on the picket line, and who many of their unions have strike funds to help them financially. And the fact they're not getting paid is one of the only drivers to get them to the bargaining table in good faith. This is absolutely a gift from Democrats to the unions, and therefore I don't think Bob Ferguson will veto it. Now, the way the Seattle Times covers this is insane, and it's, again, just another example of how this is how the media shapes the minds of voters, by presenting these things uncritically. And then in turn, that's why voters continue to put these people back in office. So I just want to read a few paragraphs from the Seattle Times coverage of this. Wahlhaus okays unemployment benefits for striking workers with a limit. It says, on Saturday, Democratic lawmakers said the bill ensures workers who choose to walk off the job will be less stressed about going without pay and seeing their finances erode in a lengthy dispute. Wow, I'm glad that we can make them less stressed. I'm glad we could do that for them. With the threat of economic hardship eased, workers will be in a better position to endure lengthy negotiations. No, they'll be in a better position to get everything they want because there's nothing forcing them back to the bargaining table. Goes on to quote Rep. Beth Dolio, a Democrat from Olympia, fundamentally, this takes a step to level the playing field for striking workers. The Times goes on to say, Republicans argued that providing benefits would be an incentive for union workers to strike. They tried unsuccessfully to amend the bill to exclude public school teachers and hospital workers. Jeremy Defoe, a Republican state rep, said, if you are paying people to strike, you will have more strikes. Rep. April Berg disagrees. They quoted her as saying, she's a Democrat, the policy only assures a level of benefits is available for workers when they do go on strike. The state is not paying workers to strike. Yes, you are. It's literally the same thing. The state is paying workers when they go on strike. So you are paying workers to go on strike. And you are giving workers more of an incentive to go on strike, and more of a safety net to go on strike. It's insane, and it is only about being a gift to the unions. The most powerful union in the state, the Washington Education Association, one of the key backers of Democratic campaigns and progressive causes. Just wait. Just wait until this program is implemented and see how many more school teacher strikes we have. It's going to explode. And then they're all going to be sitting there on the picket line while your kids are out of school, and they're going to be collecting unemployment benefits, courtesy of their buddies in Olympia. Wild stuff. Will Bob Ferguson veto it? Absolutely not. Absolutely not, because his campaign was predominantly funded by unions as well. All right, one more crazy bill I have to talk about, and this one already did get signed by Bob Ferguson, and it just shows, like, they're focused on all these ideological issues when we have nuts and bolts problems in Olympia about funding for big, important things and about taxes and all of this. And they're still focused on pushing through just nonsense. So Bob Ferguson signed House Bill 1971, and it will mandate that insurance companies cover at least 1 year of gender hormone therapy. Here's Bob signing it.
This bill allows patients to pick up an entire year's supply at one time and allows providers the flexibility to adjust the length of prescriptions based on what is best for the patient. It's important to add that this is a very uncertain time for individuals who need access to gender-affirming care, to put it very mildly, and this legislation will be a huge help in that regard. While our state does have protections in place to ensure Washingtonians have access to this care, this bill strengthens those protections, which is extremely important.
Yeah, Bob the Moderate, let's force insurance companies to cover experimental gender hormone therapy, which will have lifelong consequences for some of these young people that take it. Absolutely ridiculous. Holy Lord, I need a breath. Good. You know what? I want to switch up our ad reads because I just think I made the best case in the world for Wes Jones, right? Wes, our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, business is going to be through the roof, my friend, because I'm already hearing from people who are selling the homes that right now are rental homes, rental properties, because they're not going to deal with it anymore. And with rent control coming down the pike, things are going to get even worse. So if you're one of those people, I hate to see it happen, but I don't blame you one bit. And I don't blame people who are moving out of state over all of this. So I might as well help my friend Wes Jones, one of our great advertisers, benefit from the insanity a little bit. So if you're thinking of selling your rental home or moving out of state, reach out to our friend Wes Jones. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes is a landlord himself, and so he knows what you're going through, unfortunately, and so he can help you with this. One of the big things, getting your home ready so it when it hits the market, it's ready to go. The marketing material is great. Your home shines and it stands out among other listings. And then also key, making sure it's priced correctly when it hits the market. There's a lot of strategy involved in that. Wes has been doing this for a long time in her area, so he's got that strategy down very well. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home or your rental properties. Ridiculous. All right. So one of the lawmakers who we talked to the most, I think, this legislative session and who you heard from the most because, man, he was just on fire all session is State Representative Travis Couture, a Republican representing Allen in the surrounding areas. And he was also one of the big, well, I feel bad because Republicans have budget leads, but they basically don't get to do anything. So they can put forth ideas, which he did, but then Democrats didn't include Republicans in any of their budget discussions. So I know it was a tough couple days for Representative Travis Couture, especially with his frustration over the budget. He joins us today to talk about it. Representative Couture, welcome back to Undivided.
Hey, thanks for having me again, Brandy.
Yeah, it's been quite the session for you. I would say we played more clips from you than any other state lawmaker because you give some damn good floor speeches. But you were also pretty emotional, sometimes angry, sometimes, I mean, in tears this session. What was that about? I mean, has it just been a particularly bad session on a policy front?
This was a brutal session. I called it a five-alarm, white-hot, raging dumpster fire. It was probably the worst session. I mean, there's some people like Joe Schmidt that have been around for, and Ed Orcutt, who've been around for like 20 years or more, and they were even saying this was the worst session they've ever remembered. But there was a lot of emotion because, you know, the budget that the Democrats put together and a lot of the policy that they put together are gonna hurt people. They're going to hurt people that need us the most. They're going to hurt our businesses and our families. And I love this state. And I don't want to see it flushed down the toilet because of Democrat policies and the largest set of tax increases in state history.
Yeah, so we'll get into some of the details of those taxes. But obviously, Bob Ferguson has said he's going to take a couple weeks reviewing the budget and then come out with whatever sort of thoughts he has on it. So I guess two questions on that front. Do we anticipate that a special session is still possible or no?
Anything's still possible, okay. But based on the governor's statement, I think that he's just going to be in his first term signing the largest set of tax increases in state history is kind of how it sounded. And as you know, the governor can not sign the budget and it still becomes law, or he can veto the entire budget, or he can veto sections. He can't do line item vetoes. So the way these taxes are put together, he can choose to veto them all and it would ruin the budget, so to speak. It would throw it out of balance. But it sounds like he's just going to continue full speed ahead. The statement he put out seems like he's satisfied with it, and that's sad.
Yeah, and taking a victory lap. Oh, you know, it would have been much worse if not for me. And I kind of predicted this, that he's going to act like the one playing hardball, and at the end of the day, he'll sign new taxes. And I think it was a way to distance himself from that. And it's like, oh, but I pushed back, and legislative Democrats sort of own this. What do you make of, you know, him coming out and I don't know that he's blaming Donald Trump for our existing budget crisis, but sort of saying our state needs to steel itself for what's to come under Donald Trump with tariffs and the economy. I mean, given how we got here and who put us in this position, it's really something to turn around and blame a president, any president, for it.
Yeah, it's frankly, it's absurd. All of the things that Democrats are protesting about and complaining about, whether it be Trump or Elon Musk or whoever it is at the federal level, and the supposed cuts and tariffs that they're making. I mean, just across the border in Idaho, they're under the same tariff scheme as Washington State, but they delivered hundreds of millions of dollars of tax relief to their citizens. And they seem to manage their budget quite well. Other states are managing their budget quite well. And frankly, regardless of who was president, whether it be Donald Trump or Kamala Harris, we would have still gotten this budget. We would have still gotten this from the Democrats in Olympia. I mean, they still went from a $15 billion surplus to a $15 billion deficit based purely upon their budget negligence. Our economy is not in recession. We didn't have any economic problems, but now we'll be stealing well over $10 billion from our economy. And what did we get for it? I said on the floor that the only winners in this budget are politicians, bureaucrats, and criminals. I mean, we increased services for illegal immigrants, and we stole services from our own citizens in order to balance this budget, and it's wrong. You know, of course, a lot of the new spending is pay increases for bureaucrats, and at a time when you know, we couldn't afford to do so, an 8% increase in spending. An 8% increase of spending during a $15 billion deficit. That's just so irresponsible and reckless. The budget was visionless from the beginning, and probably because they cut out my entire side of the aisle. I didn't get to be a part of it. Republican Party didn't get to be a part of it, House or Senate. And that cuts out 3 million plus constituents and Washingtonians across the state that we represent. And in the final stages of the budget, they completely rewrote the thing in the basement, and in the cover of darkness. No chance to amend it, no chance to have public testimony or hearings. That's just simply wrong. That's not transparent and open government.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, there's so many things to say, but I think you hit it on the head, and people need to understand, because I don't think the media will do a proper job explaining it. You know, we were in a fantastic place economically, on a budget perspective. And I remember in 2019, Republicans telling Democrats, you know, you need to make sure you're putting money in away. You need to stop this sort of level of increased spending. So there was ample time to avoid a situation like this, correct?
Right, exactly. There was a lot of time, and it was all decisions made in Olympia that led us to this. Nothing else. It wasn't a bad economy. Of course, revenues went down a little bit, but I mean, our revenues actually never went down. It just slowed down from crazy levels to somewhat crazy levels, right? And we're still having record revenue in the state of Washington. We never had a revenue problem. We had a massive spending problem. And for the fourth straight budget in a row, we are spending more than we take in. And that's just simply irresponsible. We're going to be back here again because we didn't fix any of the structural problems that led us to this place.
So of all the new taxes, and I mean, there's dozens, and there's some small ones, as you said, taxing the joy out of blue collar workers, basically anything they want to do, want to put some zin in, tax, sporting event, tax, you know, beer bottles, tax, all that stuff. But then there's, of course, the big ones, you know, B&O tax, what will likely be massive property tax increases for school levies, gas tax, capital gains tax, excise tax, sales tax, the Tesla tax. I mean, just to name a few. What do you think, or where do you think regular Washingtonians are going to feel these tax increases the most?
Yeah, I think that what people need to realize is that when you tax business more, that you know, a lot of the times business is forced to place those taxes and pass them through to the consumer. And so that means higher prices. You mentioned like a bottle tax. That's going to mean higher grocery costs, right? So I think your cost of groceries, your overall cost of living, gas, groceries, rent, housing, insurance, healthcare, you name it, it's all going up as a result of this budget. And we even heard private health premiums could go up anywhere near $1,400 per year as a result of this budget. And it's all based on policy choices, picking winners and losers. And they said that they had to tax the rich. But as I look across, what they did is like a reverse Robin Hood, stealing from the poor to give to the rich and the elites. And I think that's what people are upset about. The B&O taxes, those are on our small businesses as well. I have a small business. I'm getting a B&O tax increase that I can't afford. The 1% surcharge is only temporary for the largest employers, but those large employers deliver family wage jobs with 401ks and medical and dental and vision and everything else that people rely on. And I'm super concerned about capital flight out of our state, where this budget is a really good budget for Idaho, for Arizona, for Texas. Because if you're a large employer, and look at Boeing, they moved a lot of operations to South Carolina before all of this, right? And so it's going to be devastating. If you're a barista at Starbucks, you will probably be affected by this. And it's sad because what did we get for it is the ultimate question. What did we get for the largest set of tax increases in state history? Nothing. We got nothing. We actually got robbed more. We robbed single mothers on the edge of poverty from their child support payments. I mean, it's unconscionable what kind of decisions have been made by Democrats here in Olympia. And we increased health care, increased health care for illegal immigrants. I mean, it's nuts. Housing and essential needs. We actually kicked our own citizens off of housing and essential needs in order to give more to illegal immigrants. This was a session of protecting criminals. It was a session of giving pay increases to bureaucrats who don't even provide service delivery to our most needy citizens. And of course, politicians like myself will get a pay increase out of this session. But it's just phenomenal. I mean, the property tax sticker shock, people are going to feel that through their school levies. But if you're in a red poor rural property poor district, you're going to get less as a result and pay more for your schools. It's absolutely nuts.
Yeah, and I think to end here, it is nuts and people are mad, but at the same time, I mean, the Democratic majority didn't happen overnight. I mean, people voted for this. They continue to vote the same people back in office who continue to outspend our means, who continue to increase taxes, and they just, I don't have any reason to believe that this time will be any different. I mean, what do we need to do to wake people up and have them connect this crunch they're feeling to the people who they're voting to send to Olympia?
Yeah, it's a tough question because I think in politics, oftentimes people pay attention to the national level and they associate that with all politics at all levels. And it's not true. The state government is vastly different than the federal government. And although some things that the federal government does affects our state, but none so as much as the state government. And so it's a lot of hard work when you're already in a minority to try to message that. And when you have a media that isn't always on your side, as you know. But I think people, I mean, we did a tremendous job. I mean, I always say that we're outnumbered, but we're never outclassed. And I think that we've done a tremendous job to kind of really spell out what's happening here in Olympia this year, probably more so than in other years past. The business community here in Washington State, sometimes on our side, sometimes not, depending on the issue, but very upset. And even the Seattle Times editorial board, Twilight Zone, is on our side, And so, we got to keep pushing the message and keep, just trying to connect the dots for people because people are going to feel the crunch. And I think that based on a lot of the record testimony we had in Olympia on some of these taxes and other things, especially like ending parents' rights in schools, absolutely nuts that Chris Reichtall, if you don't follow his ideology, could just rip all the money from your school. 11th hour change to that bill. It's just absolutely nuts. And so, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done. I wish I knew the perfect answer, but I love this state and I want to save it. And I'll just continue fighting on.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the Seattle Times editorial board being on your guys' side on the budget front, but they'll turn around the next election cycle and they'll endorse Democrats, the same ones who put us in this pickle. So, you know, to me, it's just they're talking out of both sides of their mouth and they're not helping the populace understand what's going on. Representative Travis Couture, someone needs to put together a killer montage of all your best speeches from the session, because there were some good ones. So we appreciate you fighting so hard and you caring so much. I mean, I think there are a lot of politicians who care, but you really stand out as someone who gets very emotionally invested and what's going on, and it shows. So we appreciate you, and thanks for fighting for everyone, not just people who agree with you politically.
Thanks, Brandy, and I appreciate you too, covering all the hard news here in Olympia.
All right, so that's Representative Travis Couture. And again, you know, and we have some breaking news that we're going to get to coming up in a moment that happened while we were playing that interview for you. I don't care about the Democrat-Republican thing. It's not about like dogging on Democrats or whatever it is, but they're the only ones with any power to do anything. So everything bad happening in our state is their fault. It is. It is. Anyone who tries to suggest otherwise is just helplessly biased. And if there were Democrats pushing back against these policies, if there were Democrats pushing good ideas, we'd give them credit. We've given them credit before. But this is about one party controlling everything and it leading to horrible consequences for the people of this state, who then turn around and it's like an abusive relationship, who then turn around and continue to put them back in office because really the media spins a tale that's favorable for Democrats. And so people aren't making that connection that Democrats are the ones doing this to us, because the media treats them with kid gloves and covers for them. Like the Seattle Times. Yeah, you'll go back, you'll complain about the budget process now, and then you'll go back and you'll endorse the exact same people who put us into this situation and voted for the largest tax increase in state history. Until we let go of this Democrat-Republican thing, vote blue no matter who, we're not going to fix it. So that's the key, and that's really the challenge here. That segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. And a big thank you to Future 42 for sponsoring our weekly segment that we run during the legislative session, Politics Unpacked, helping people make sense of what happens every week of the session. We'll have our final episode of Politics Unpacked sort of wrap everything up coming up this Friday. All right, I want to get to some breaking news that happened during that interview. And I don't know if they can even do this, but Caroline Leavitt, the White House press secretary, is speaking right now in front of a new media gathering. I know our friend Ari Hoffman is there as well. And so she was talking about the previous executive order from the Trump administration, basically threatening to strip federal funding from states that are continuing to allow biological boys to compete against girls. So obviously Washington is one of those states. I have never heard Caroline Leavitt say it quite this way, but she now says that they might consider prosecuting state officials who continue to disobey this federal executive order and continue to allow boys to compete in girls' sports. Here's what she said.
The president signed a very strong executive order, making it the policy of the United States federal government that there are only two sexes, male and female, and we are not going to tolerate biological men competing in sports or impeding in private spaces for women like myself or you. And we've seen states defy this federal order. You've seen the state of Maine, unfortunately, because of their liberal governor, who nobody in that state disagrees with, I will add, being from New England, I can attest to that. People are incredibly fed up with her trying to oppose this common sense message. You've seen young women who have had to go on television to plead with their governor, please stop letting men play against me in sports. We shouldn't live in a country where that even has to happen. The president deeply understands that. That's why he signed that EO. And when Maine decided not to follow it, the Department of Justice sued them. So anyone who disobeys federal law will be either prosecuted, sued, or say goodbye to your federal funding.
Prosecuted? I mean, can you imagine Chris Rakedal, the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, getting prosecuted by the federal government for allowing boys to compete against girls in sports? Now, I don't know that that should be or will be the very first lever that they pull. I don't necessarily even want to see that, as grossed out as I am by Chris Rakedal's continued commitment to allowing boys to invade girls' spaces. But if you pull federal funding and they don't care and they keep doing it, you sue them and they don't care and they keep doing it, then what other option is left? And I was critical of the Trump administration last week because Donald Trump has signed all of these executive orders, many of which seem like they're tailor-made for the state of Washington, yet we don't see anything happening. You know, strip DEI. Our governor comes out last week and announces that we're going to have a state DEI conference. I mean, just flagrantly violating these orders and almost daring the Trump administration to do something about it, and then they don't do anything about it. And then you the executive orders on boys and girls sports, and to this point, we haven't actually seen anything in Washington State. They've seemed obsessed with Maine. But if you're going to threaten things with these executive orders, when are you going to make good on those threats? And so I'm sorry, I like what the Trump administration is doing. We have another executive order that's very relevant to our state we'll talk about coming up in a moment, and national. But it's one thing to say it. It's one thing to sign it. It's another thing for that to have teeth and actually mean something. So if it comes down to prosecution of state officials, gosh, I mean, how do I feel about that? If that's the last lever you pull, I guess I'm fine. But part of me thinks they'd love it. Can you imagine the street cred in Seattle that Bob Ferguson would get if the DOJ comes in and walks him away in handcuffs? Or Chris Rakedahl for you know, sticking to the DEI and sticking to the boys and girls sports things? I mean, they would probably welcome it. So I don't know if that's the best thing either, but if it gets to that point, somebody just said Fugitive Mama on X, perp walk Rakedahl. But would he not love that? So something has to be done to make sure that the executive orders mean something. Because I'll celebrate it, but I'll only celebrate it for so long. Because when a few months go by or a year goes by and that executive order doesn't mean jack and nothing's been done here, we're probably the worst state in the nation for this stuff, then my patience is going to start to wear thin. But politicians being prosecuted, we'll see if that's something that they're actually willing or able to do. All right, coming up next, speaking of DEI, there's a Washington town that would not be at the top of my list for doubling down on DEI. You will not believe the insanity around DEI that ensued at one of their city council meetings. I think this is an exclusive. Haven't seen it anywhere else. You'll see it here on Undivided coming up next. First, our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital is going to have another one of his free live webinars, which is basically to help you understand what's happening nationally with the economy and tariffs and the markets and all of that, and how it impacts your retirement portfolio. So this latest one coming up Thursday, May 22nd, is going to be the tariff edition. Which that's very timely. So how are the tariffs impacting your retirement portfolio, if at all? How are they impacting the overall economy? So you can sign up totally free at knowyourriskradio.com, and Zach Abraham will give you sort of his thoughts on what's happening with the tariffs and how it could impact your retirement or put your retirement portfolio at greater risk. How is your retirement portfolio held up amidst all of this? And then you can ask him any questions that you have as well. So again, Bulwark's Tariff Edition webinar coming up Thursday, May 22nd. They're going to cover how the market is reacting to recent tariffs, how it impacts your retirement portfolio, then the long-term outlook for 2025, and a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. Sign up now, knowyourriskradio.com. Again, that's knowyourriskradio.com. No cost, free to you. Will be very, very informative, as his live webinars always are. All right, when I think of the Washington town of Ellensburg, what comes to your mind, Nicole? I already know what the answer is. It's where I met my husband.
Right, the rodeo.
The rodeo, the Ellensburg rodeo. Good old-fashioned, down-home, hard-working people.
Absolutely.
Going to the rodeo where I met my sweet husband, who was kind of pretending to be a cowboy. And then I learned he was more city than I was. But
well,
small
now he's
town,
not.
I know, now
Brandon
he's country,
cattle.
Right? He was branding cattle this weekend. Small town, good living. And apparently also a town that is now obsessed with DEI. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Ellensburg, how disappointing. How disappointing is this? So here's the deal, a little bit of context here. So those of you who don't maybe know where Ellensburg is, it's east of Seattle, past the mountain passes, where it sort of starts to become a little more, what do you call it, desert-ish, I guess? So it's a small town. I mean, what's
prairie-like.
The population?
Yeah,
prairie-like. Cool place, a lot of farmers and ranchers out there, and they have the state's biggest rodeo that happens there. So just set the stage. So this is very odd coming from Ellensburg. I'm kind of blown away by it. But maybe this is the creep from Seattle, where, you know, Seattleites started to creep out to the suburbs a little bit, and then Amazon moved jobs from Seattle to Bellevue. So all of a sudden, Ellensburg became commutable, and people will have jobs in Seattle and commute from Ellensburg. So now you got this blue creep into a town like Ellensburg, nowhere safe. So they have, every year they do the city's comprehensive plan. It's not a big city, right? So they have this thing called the comprehensive plan where they look at sort of their priorities for the year and they set them out in a series of chapters. So in Ellensburg, they have something in their comprehensive plan specific to DEI. So they have a DEI commission and an entire chapter, it's chapter 9 of their comprehensive plan, dedicated to basically the city's DEI initiatives. So as part of their comprehensive plan, they look at it every year and they ask for public input. And the public can submit, you know, suggested amendments to the city's comprehensive plan. For the last 8 years, not many members of the public have submitted anything, any feedback on the comprehensive plan, any sort of amendments. In 2018, 6 members of the public submitted feedback. In 2019, it was 5. In 2020, it was 0. In 2021, it was 3. In 2022, it was 0. In 2023, it was 5. In 2024, it was 5. In 2025, this year, 306 people submitted feedback to the city's comprehensive plan. So going from like maybe 5, sometimes 0, to 306 citizens. You want to guess what the vast majority of that feedback was about? Nicole says all.
All of them.
Every single one of. Mm-hmm. Nicole's been the one researching this. Every single one of the 306 suggestions about the city's comprehensive plan had to do with their Chapter 9 DEI. With people having a problem with the city's DEI commission and some of its DEI efforts. And of course, there's much more attention on DEI, right? But from a couple people a year to 306. So there was a city council meeting, and I want you to understand how insane this is. Because the city got all of these, I would basically say, angry letters from citizens about their DEI commission, 306 in a single year, how do they respond to that? Well, they decided, rather than take it seriously, hear public input, consider abolishing Chapter 9, changing DEI, they decided, let's just get rid of this feedback process. Let's just stop the process by which the public can offer feedback on our comprehensive plan. So they got too much negative feedback about the DEI commission. They decided, we're just not going to take feedback anymore. I swear to God. So the citizens who gave the feedback on DEI are livid, and understandably so. I want to take you through a little bit of what happened at a recent Ellensburg City Council meeting. So this is a mom who stood up at the meeting, and she's frustrated with all this DEI nonsense. And she talked about a man exposing himself to girls, she's a parent, in a pool locker room in town.
The DEI has failed our kids and the very people that they promote to protect. There is currently a small family bathroom that now has benches. Thank you. And it is, however, too small for a family of four to use with mom's help. And then there is nowhere to rinse off before entering the pool. So we're back to square one, where the family must enter the women's locker room to rinse off when a man can and has been standing with his genitalia fully exposed. The increased size of the privacy changing stalls in the women's bathroom has been appreciated, but the issue still remains that we have to walk past a man with his penis hanging out in the shower to get to said private changing stalls. DEI has failed this man, and it has failed our children. With a leaky roof and an HVAC system that doesn't work and a host of logistic issues within the layout of the facility, we need a bigger pool budget. But for me, the white elephant in the room is the DEI rules that have been put in place to displace the families so that a man can hang out his genitalia in the women's bathroom without consequences to him, but massive consequences to others. If DEI fails one part of the umbrella that it says it protects, then it as a whole has failed. DEI has broadened its umbrella of coverage too far. It's had too many fingers in too many pies. We need to eliminate DEI and try again.
Yeah, so these are these citizens angry about DEI. They tried the approved route by going and submitting these proposals for amendments to the city's comprehensive plan to do away with the DEI as it exists now. And the city reacts by calling a meeting and saying, hey, we're going to vote to suspend the citizen amendment process. So you have people showing up who are livid about this and telling these stories about these real life, like, hey, my kids have to walk by a grown man with his ding-a-ling hanging out. That's not right. And it's not right. So how do you even argue against that? Well, there was one guy, Tory Jones, a man, who showed up and he spoke in support of the city's DEI initiatives. And his argument, honest to God, is that it's not that bad for a child to see a penis.
Penises in dressing rooms. I wonder about that. I don't think it's inherently harmful for a woman to see a penis. I grew up with a male and a female parent. I saw both penises and vaginas growing up, and I came out perfectly fine. So,
obviously
and
not.
You know, it goes into other areas. So say you have a father. I'm a father. I took my child to the pool many times growing up, right? My child happens to have male genitalia. But if I had a daughter, would I then not be allowed to bring my daughter into the changing room if her mother's not there to make sure that she gets showered? Would she not then see penises? I don't feel like that would damage her. And then, you know, as a father, am I not allowed to take my child to the swimming pool? So, and you know, a male bathroom or whatever the case may be. And the other thing we're looking at is say the it's a transgender person. They've had gender reassignment surgery, so they now have the physical characteristics of their gender. Which are they going to use? Are they going to use the women's room? Or are they going to use the men's room? I feel like it would be very much more unsafe for a woman to be in the male dressing room than vice versa.
Wait, so it's unsafe for a female to be around male genitalia? Yeah.
He says it would be unsafe to make a transgender person, like who maybe had their penis cut off, to make them go in a male locker room, but it's not unsafe to let the one that still has a penis in with girls.
Right.
If I'm following, this is Ellensburg, people. This is Rodeo Town. These are the kind of people, and that's their logic, right? And this guy, he couldn't just stop with his own public testimony. There was a mom of 9 kids who's been involved in the foster care system who says it's her responsibility, she feels like, to protect her child's innocence. And it should be. A parent should be able to protect a young girl, their child, from seeing a grown man's penis. I mean, right? It's crazy. And so she's speaking about this, and that guy you just heard from, Tory Jones, heckles her.
I'm a mother of 9 kids. I'm a grandmother of 1. And I would like to say that it has, unfortunately, I can tell you that when my kids go to a swimming pool, they bring a robe because I need them to come out because it has been an occurrence. I was a foster parent for 10 years. It's been my soul, living and breathing, to do my best to protect children. And I want to protect their innocence. Children, they don't, you know, you said, okay, you had children and you let them, and you would allow them to. It is your.
Hey, stop the timer.
Okay.
I'll have you removed from the audience. Sorry,
and
ma'am.
He leaves.
It's okay.
He leaves the room.
I just want to say that it is that gentleman's choice to expose his children to things, but for the innocence of children altogether, they don't need to be exposed to any of this. That is trauma. That is sexual abuse. Okay, when we're exposing to a stranger's, I don't care, girl, boy, whatever, that is trauma. So we need to think about the children as we move forward, the children of Kittitas County.
Yeah, and it should be a parent's choice. And I'm sorry, with that guy, I don't mean to judge anyone. I don't recall ever seeing my parents' genitalia when I was growing up. He acts like this is just a very normal thing. So anyway, I have to give all the credit in the world to Councilmember Joshua Thompson, who appears to be the only one in a city like Ellensburg with an ounce of common sense. So not everyone was allowed to speak at this meeting. At a meeting when they're deciding to shut citizens out of the process of amending the city's comprehensive plan, they don't allow all of them to speak. And he's frustrated because he's like, it would have taken maybe 50, it's a small meeting. There's only a few people in the room. It would have taken maybe 15 minutes just to let everyone speak and say their piece. And so he loses it on his fellow council members.
This would have been the one meeting where we could have heard everybody that needed to raise their hand and talk about something that's dividing this community, and to put anybody off in this room for for to say 15 minutes is, our job up here is to listen, and this council tonight failed that. I hate raising my voice, but I have to raise my voice for everybody that's in this room and everybody that's at home. There's been too many people that have been told to shut up or come back later, or you can't talk. It's an embarrassment. Damn it, somebody's got to raise their voice for these people.
Yeah. I love people like that. And he's right. Look at that room. What is there, 20 people in there? You don't have time. Your time is so precious that while you're about to vote to strip away their ability to be part of this process, you don't have time to hear from every single one of them that wants to speak. So he said that the motion to suspend in 2026, allowing citizens to weigh in and offer amendments to the city's comprehensive plan, goes to a vote.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye, aye too will vote aye. Opposed?
No.
That motion passes.
I love that guy. I love him already. Think of how crazy that is. We have a process for you to weigh in. We didn't like how you weighed in. So now we're taking that process away. What was the process for in the first place? What was the process for in the first place? Just so you could say that you heard public input? You didn't really ever care about it, right? And if we get too much public input that we disagree with, we'll just get rid of the public input process. If that's happening in Ellensburg, God save the rest of the state of Washington. Things are really out of control here. Unbelievable. All right, we got some more national news to get to next, and another executive order that maybe is happening as we speak that will hopefully impact Washington State. First, I've talked about my fantastic success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. It's been about 2.5 years since I started the program, and I'm still going strong, and it's just like melted into my life very nicely. I lost 30 pounds in the first 60 days. I'm down now. I need to update that graphic because I'm down 45 pounds total. I told Nicole every day I come in, I said, I feel great. I showed her this pair of jeans. I was like, remember when this was tight on me? Now it was all baggy in the legs, and it just feels good to feel good. And I just got back from vacation, and going on vacation, if you've ever struggled with your weight, when you're not feeling good about yourself, that's like the one thing you sit there and obsess over on vacation. And to not obsess over that and just enjoy vacation, I'll tell you, it's so worth it. So it's not going to be the program for everyone. I would recommend, as with any weight loss program, making sure that you figure out if it's something you can stick to before you invest in it. So reach out to our friends at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. They have a handy little scheduling system where you can schedule a 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. And they'll just go over what the program entails, and you can decide whether it's something that will work for you. But I just hear from so many still while I'm going out, even I was down in the legislature, like two different lawmakers came up to me and said, I did Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. I feel so good. I'm like, good for you. I love hearing those stories. So EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Okay, so we talked about Caroline Leavitt saying we might prosecute state officials who continue to allow boys to compete against girls. Today, again, maybe as we speak, President Donald Trump will be signing another executive order, and this one targets sanctuary states. Here again is Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt.
The second EO is centered around protecting American communities from criminal aliens, and it will direct the Attorney General and Secretary of Homeland Security to publish a list of state and local jurisdictions that obstruct the enforcement of federal immigration laws.
Yeah, so I think that's good. We need to have some sort of crackdown on what's happening with sanctuary policies. And in combination with that, something related to that, over the weekend, the Department of Justice has actually come to the defense of the Adams County, Washington sheriff. So this is the sheriff that came out and said publicly, I'm not going to interfere in any way with federal immigration officials, and I'm not going to follow some of the sanctuary policies on the books. For instance, I'm going to honor ICE detainers and help ICE determine whether there's someone illegally in our jail that they can just come scoop up. And so what happened? Our state attorney general sued him, and now the Department of Justice is coming to the defense of the Adams County Sheriff. They filed a brief on his defense, on his behalf, in this lawsuit. I want to read part of it for you. Again, this is from the DOJ in the case of State of Washington versus the Adams County Sheriff's Office. They said the United States has a substantial interest in and long history of working cooperatively with state and local governments on a range of law enforcement priorities, including immigration. They go on to say these cooperative efforts are critical to enabling the federal government to identify and remove the hundreds of thousands of individuals who violate immigration laws each year, including many thousands who are convicted of serious crimes. This undertaking fulfills the executive branch's responsibility to enforce federal statutes and to protect public safety. Washington's Keep Washington Working Act, which essentially is the act that thwarts efforts to cooperate with federal immigration officials, strikes at the heart of this cooperative scheme. The act, by intent and design, interferes with the federal government's enforcement of federal immigration law, and it violates the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution. So I am happy to hear that the Adams County Sheriff will not have to go this alone. He has the weight of the federal government and the Department of Justice behind him. And if he prevails in this lawsuit and the state of Washington does not, you have to wonder what the impact will be. Then you could have sheriffs and law enforcement officials in all of these common sense and more rural and red areas that wouldn't have to abide by sanctuary policies anymore. And they could help federal immigration officials get murderers and rapists and drug traffickers out of their communities more easily. And that ultimately is what we want to see. Also, I should make a pitch here for our special report, Sanctuary. It's up on all of our platforms if you haven't watched it. And it takes a look at, and we go out with ICE, and it takes a look at some of the people who they're rounding up. Who they're arresting, who have committed heinous crimes in our communities, and the ways, it details the ways that sanctuary policies do interfere with some of these efforts at the federal level to get these people out of our communities who are not legally supposed to be here. So good for the DOJ on that. I look forward to reading more on this executive order around sanctuary states and seeing what it might mean for the state of Washington. Okay, let's see. I want to get to our subscriber poll and then we'll move on to comments and maybe a birthday song for Nicole. She's like, please don't. Oh, I will. Although I'm a little stuffed up.
Uh-oh.
I think from being out and all the sagebrush this weekend, we were in Eastern Washington. Do you want a sexy happy birthday? Are you thinking like
commenting?
You thinking like Marilyn Monroe, happy birthday, Mr. President? I can give you a sexy happy birthday if you want. That's kind of weird.
It's okay. It's okay.
No, now I will. Okay. Let's get to our daily subscriber show on Patreon, Locals and X. A special thank you to our paid subscribers of Undivided who help us do this show. So I gave you two bills that are still awaiting a signature from Governor Bob Ferguson. I asked you, which would you most like to see vetoed? Rent control or pay for striking workers? I feel like one is about, like, for one, the impact is obviously going to be far worse. But the other one, ideologically, being just a payday for people who donate to the political campaigns of Democrats is almost worse in that sense. Nicole, which one would you most like to see vetoed? I mean,
well, yeah, I would,
it's possible he vetoes neither, but.
Right. I would say rent control, obviously, because I think it'll affect more people negatively, where pay for striking workers is just frustrating that, I mean, it's just frustrating that that money is going to go to them. And it will create more strikes and stuff.
Yeah,
but I think that the rent control is going to have a societal impact. It's going to be
Here's interesting. Pretty split today.
Hmm.
Pretty split, 45% and 55%. You want to guess which one is winning amongst subscribers?
I would say rent control, but maybe not.
It's not. 45%.
Maybe we have a bunch of homeowners that are listening. 45%. And I think we've already kind of scared off the landlords. Even without rent control, we've scared them off with the all the other laws that are, you know, pro-tenant, anti-landlord.
Yeah, and I mean, both are bad. And mm-hmm. Bob Ferguson doesn't have to veto one of them. He very well could sign both of them. I don't see him vetoing both of them. Let me see here. Alice says, pay for striking workers. Give me a break. The unions have too much juice with the Democratic lawmakers. The unions didn't even complain when the D's gave it to the citizens of Washington right up the tailpipe. I bet they will endorse all of them again, too. Let me see here. Chris, pay the ones who are acting against your own self-interest. WTF, the state thinks it can legislate prudent business sense. Bill, that's a hard choice. They're both are equally bad. I voted for striking workers because it just pisses me off. I mean, they both piss me off. Let me see. Kyle, I was going to say I think rent control will be more damaging to more people and cause more damage to the state economy, but pay for striking workers will inevitably cause employers to leave or shrink operations in Washington state. It's a real Sophie's choice. I've never heard of that. Is that a saying? It's a real Sophie's choice?
Both bad choices.
I've never heard that before.
What? You haven't?
No, what does that come from? I learn something new from you guys every day.
I believe it's a book, right? Yeah. Yeah, forced to choose. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, it's the woman that had to choose whether to send her daughter to a gas chamber or the concentration camp. It's a Nazi thing.
Really sad, actually. Okay, well, I learn something new from you guys all the time. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Why? Tough choices. I voted for striking workers in hopes voters have more sense about this than the politicians pandering to the extremists. And we also need to have Brian Haywood of Let's Go Washington on to see after the session what they're thinking about running initiatives on, because I would like to hear that. Jeff, both bills will be disastrous. As a former landlord, the rent control bill will have wider reaching consequences, but paying workers so they can strike sends a bad message and stacks the deck against businesses. And also pay for striking workers. If you have kids in school, again, you don't think that teachers are going to strike just like that because they're not faced with this possibility of being out of work for a long period of time without pay. So yeah, there are some definite negative consequences that are widespread for both of them. I land on rent control, though. I mean, rent control is going to be disastrous for the state, for housing availability. I mean, that really is one of the big issues in the state for everyone across all political and ideological spectrums. Is it's really expensive to buy a house. It's really expensive to buy a house, and that can have such a detrimental impact on you. And so it's just going to get worse under this bill. All right, let's see here. What was I going to do? Oh, yes. I have told you guys over and over, take the First Mark challenge. While we were sitting here, I got a nice email from First Mark Insurance saying, hey, Brandy, just wanted to let you know your umbrella coverage, your umbrella policy is up for renewal. Has anything changed? Just checking in. Here's how much it'll cost. And I love that. And if you're not using First Mark, who's doing that for you? Are you doing it yourself? Don't do that. Take the First Mark challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. They have been doing this for a long time in our area. They're very, very good at what you do, and you never pay them a dime for their services. So that's the part that's really a no-brainer for me. Where there's a lot of, I think, stress and worry about, do I have the right insurance? Do I have what I need? Am I getting the best price? That is just completely taken away from you when you work with First Mark Insurance. So start by taking the First Mark challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com. They'll go over your current insurance. They'll talk to you about your insurance needs, maybe some changes that you have coming up. Like for Mike and I, after we got married, we were thinking about life insurance, not too much that he'd want to cash in on it, you know, an appropriate amount, right? Life insurance, you know, all these other things that we never thought of before we were joined together. And so First Mark walked us through that process, and it was incredibly helpful. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. You, not the insurance company. So they're always going to have your best interest in mind. So if you haven't done it yet, take the First Mark challenge today. All right. First, Nicole, join us. Will you, fresh off her 25th birthday?
Right.
Mm-hmm. There were a lot of, I had a live subscriber Q&A last night, and there were a lot of happy birthday wishes because it was actually your birthday yesterday.
Right. Oh, no. Here we go.
You told me sexy. So now you're going to get, should I take my shirt off?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Do you want me to take it off?
I'm positive.
My pants?
No.
Okay.
Babe, just like that.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Nicole. Happy birthday to you.
Wow.
You're welcome.
It's like whispery sexiness.
I tried. That's okay. As sexy as I get.
Thank you.
Could have been sexier with my shirt off, but probably a good choice. All right. So happy birthday. What'd you do yesterday?
You played softball. I am hurting today.
Yeah.
It was a doubleheader, first of the year. My ribs hurt. My legs hurt. It hurts to breathe.
Get a year older. Nicole plays one game of softball and now she can't breathe.
My finger hurts. Oh, my
it is. It is amazing the things that as you get a little older take a toll on you that you used to be able to do. Like, we were just riding quads around this weekend, and just from, like, bouncing.
Yeah.
My back and my lower back, and it's just... And then muscles Mike got kicked in the knee. So you remember my husband got attacked by a sea lion in Cabo? The same leg, he was helping our neighbors in Eastern Washington. We have some property out there, and we're surrounded by cattle ranchers, and they were branding the calves. And Mike helps them, and Mike loves it. He just loves it. And he just got... He deserved it, obviously. He's trying to get the calves in there to brand. One of them just the biggest one too.
Yeah,
the couples, they were, most of them were small. This one was like a behemoth. Mm-hmm. Just right in the knee. Just, what do you call it? A little donkey kick.
Yeah.
Right in the knee, and his knee is just black and blue. The animals, is it a bad sign that the animals are attacking my husband?
Nature is turning against him. It sure seems like it.
And he's such a good person.
I know.
You know, so it's like he doesn't deserve it. But he was putting them in a chute to be branded. So yeah, I would have kicked him too.
Yeah.
I didn't really do any physical labor during this. I stood there and laughed at my husband as he got peed on and pooped on and kicked. And occasionally when he looked too sweaty, I'd give him some water.
Well,
so
that was nice.
Yeah, I thought so. Sounds all like right. Fun. No, it was an interesting experience. I mm-hmm. like to see. I mean, you get an appreciation for what it takes mm-hmm. to be a farmer, a cattle rancher, and to do these things. And one of the things I loved about the experience of getting to see what they were doing is they had their kids. So it's like a family. I mean, they've been there for generations.
It's a big deal. Was there a barbecue? I mean, normally there's like a whole day around it.
We ate mm-hmm. food and all that. Mm-hmm. And then people, their friends came in to help. And they have, you know, their kids and then their kids' as kids. So there was this girl, must have been 9 years old. She had a knee brace on from a trampoline injury. And she's in there doing the same job my husband is. And my husband's like this big dude. And she's just running circles around him, just getting the calves in there and just absolutely killing it. And I thought it was so cool to see these kids working so hard mm-hmm. and just helping their family out and getting done what needed to get done. And they loved it. They were having a blast. Yep. And I'm just like, man, this is such a good example of what this like wholesome lifestyle can, the difference, right?
Right.
Between kids values. Like that and some of the kids in the city who are just mm-hmm. hooked to their devices. And absolutely. So it's just a really cool experience.
I actually have some family that owns a dairy farm in Wisconsin. And,
yeah.
And if the calf is born on your birthday, you get to name it. So I get to name a cow because she texts me and she's like, you got one.
Oh, I love that. So, what'd you name it?
I haven't really decided yet. I'm thinking about it. It's a big, I don't know. They keep them for a long time. And I want it to be one of the good producers.
What about Brandy?
No.
I guess I don't want to be named after a cow.
I almost was going to name it Rain, but spelled R-A-Y-N-E because like Seattle, it would be the Washington cow, right?
Okay.
But I was like, that's really cheesy and weird. It's, you know, very hippie, weirdish.
You think on it.
So I'm going to think on
think
it.
Think on it. That's good. All right. To comments, Old Sub Sailor, $20 Super Chat. The commie Dems have corrupted the voting process as well. They will never be removed from power because the Republican Party is totally defunct in this state. The National Republican Party won't pay to overcome the corruption. Nicole's Cat with a Super Chat. Happy birthday, Mom. I can just picture your cats. Happy birthday, Mom. Happy birthday. Papa Woody says, come on to Washington, Pam. I think Pam Bondi is that. And also said, happy Taurus birthday. You're a Taurus?
Yes,
ma'am. Is that it right now?
A bull, see?
Oh,
okay. I'm pretty stubborn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You and my husband. Yeah, two stubborn people in my life. How'd this happen?
It happened.
I'm not stubborn. I'm perfect. Jeff Eklund, Republicans are the party of businessmen. They make things. Democrats are the party of lawyers. They take things. It's a fact. For example, look up the prior professions of past presidents and also the professions of past governors of our state. Bob Ferguson, lawyer.
Uh-huh.
Jay Inslee, lawyer. Christine Gregoire, lawyer. I mean, there's a common theme here.
Wow.
Greg Olakis, man, my shoelace just broke. Damn that orange man. It's all his fault.
It's true.
It's like you crash on your bike, that meme where it's like Peter Griffin crashing his bike and then he sits there and rocks back and forth.
Right.
It's like, oh, Trump, you know, crash my bike.
I had a discussion with friends this weekend over politics. They're like, they just can't believe that we support Trump sometimes, right? And it is... It's exhausting arguing with people like that because they actually end up agreeing with me on more things than they think they're going to agree with me on. And then, but they're like, but I don't like it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and then the tariffs and like, I don't, one of them said, I'm not better off now than I was four months ago. I'm like, but why were you not better off 4 months ago?
Right.
That was because of 4 years. It's just exhausting.
It is. But again, it's the media.
Exactly.
I mean, that is the primary issue in America
is
the news media. And that breaks my heart. I mean, that's the profession I wanted to have for the rest of my life and, you know, be, and I thought it was so noble and worthy and important. And it's like, they are ruining people's lives by not doing their job because they're, of course, so hopelessly biased. But
there are some things that I wish, because they were arguing about things being out in court and Trump being challenged all the time, and it's just this constant, you know, lawsuit after lawsuit, nothing actually gets done. And I will agree with that, that it is frustrating, but I guess it's frustrating on both sides because he does some things that he knows are going to be challenged and thrown out. And then they also challenge him on things that they shouldn't be challenging him on. Like, let it go. So it's on
both sides. Pick your battles. They're unwilling to pick their battles.
If everything's a 10, nothing's a 10. Yeah. Protesting, they're like, oh, it's not okay to protest. I'm like, absolutely it is. But if you're protesting every day about everything, nothing's a 10.
No, because like racist, you call everything racist, now nothing's racist because you just overuse the word, you overuse all these things. Trump is a constitutional crisis and all this. It's like, okay, now I don't think anything is a constitutional crisis. So you're having the opposite of the intended impact.
The reparation thing, I was told that was a drop in the bucket. I'm like, yeah, but if there's a lot of drop in the buckets, that's a pretty full bucket.
And it's, 100%. All right, Necro Two Shoes, where are Washingtonians going to feel it? When you make the state a shelter for welfare recipients, illegals, and criminals, our safety is going to feel it. We're already feeling it on the safety front. This is just insult to injury. We're already feeling it on the tax front. We're already feeling it on the gas front. We're already feeling it on the property tax front. We're already feeling it on the safety front. So this just makes all of that significantly worse. And the question is there a point where it's bad enough where people start to change their voting habits? And I don't care if it's for Republicans. I'm not a Republican. I have no skin in the game with the two-party system. I care about individual people and their priorities and the policies that they will vote for or not vote for. If you're a moderate Democrat and you're going to be willing to push back against these things, by all means. And that's one of the things Republicans need to realize is you're going to have to put your pride aside and your party loyalty aside. And in some of these races where it's a socialist progressive versus a Democrat who might side with reason 50% of the time, you're going to have to start donating to their campaigns. You're going to have to start helping their campaigns, and you're going to have to start filling in the circles for them because not every Democrat is created equal. And that's the thing that's going to start to change it in the state of Washington. All right. Huckle, Pick, and Bear. I like that name. Mm-hmm. We are all now dumber for having listened to that speech. Which speech? My speech?
I believe it was Sean Scott's.
Oh, okay. Thanks, guys. DCBs, does that guy realize Washington State wasn't around at the time of Washington? Yeah. So it's George Washington's fault. According to socialist Sean Scott, it's George Washington's fault why we need rent control in the present day. Great. Great thinking there. Concerned humanity. I know a lot of people who own homes. They didn't inherit the house. They didn't inherit any money. They work hard and didn't buy stupid stuff so they could buy a house. Exactly. This idea, this notion that if you own property or land, it must have come from someone else. You must not have worked for it. Mike and I bought land a few years ago before I quit my TV job. You think I got any money from my family? Like, do you know anything about how I grew up? You think Mike got any money from his family? No, we worked hard for it and we made a decision that it's something that we wanted to do and we figured out how much money we needed to save to make it happen. So give me a break. Dave Marcus, I'm Native American and I myself don't understand their mentality. They seem to get more ignorant by the hour. I have no hate nor ask for anyone to pay me for what happened decades ago. Pat Davidson, Ellensburg is the home of Central Washington University, the university that gave a day off for those mourning the win of President Trump. That's true. But I sort of try to bifurcate universities and places of higher learning from the surrounding area.
A lot of people that work there that live in the city of Ellensburg. So that might be why they've had a takeover of some sort.
Yeah, they've gone wild. And then I had to include this comment from Tia. It was from last night's subscriber Q&A, but I thought you'd get a good kick out of it. She said, I used to drive my three kids around in a big Suburban and I'd get yelled at and flipped off for hurting the environment. My kids all grew up and moved out, so I decided to do the right thing and get a small EV liberal car to hopefully not get yelled at. She got a Tesla. Now they're calling me a racist and a Nazi. Which is so funny. Literally, remember when that was a thing? Is like looking down upon truck people who drove a truck or a Suburban and you're killing the environment. So she's like, okay, well, I'll get a Tesla. And now she's a Nazi. So it's like, you can't win. No matter what, you can't win. I thought that was very, very funny.
We'll never be able to win.
No.
I mean, like,
can't win with the crazy left.
Can't win with crazy.
Absolutely not. I'm waiting for a lawsuit over the Tesla tax. Elon's got a... Can we not get your attention? They literally passed a tax to punish you. Let's get some attention here.
Wild.
I'm going to talk to Zach Abraham about that this week on Doge Watch. And with that, overtime, about a half hour overtime, let's get to our closing sanity check. So, of course, we broke the news about the changes to the state's reparations program that now gift home down payments to Black first-time homebuyers to the tune of around $120,000 a year. And this went nuts on social media. I mean, it got picked up by people in the Trump administration, by libs of TikTok, all over the place, which was great news because it got a lot of attention toward it. So Fox News host Kevin Cork was talking about this this weekend, and he's Black. And he said not only is it illegal, but it's morally wrong.
Redlining is a real deal, but the fact is, choosing this based on race is wrong. It is not only illegal, it's morally wrong, because what you're basically saying to, what about the poor white guy who lived in Appalachia? What about the poor Hispanic person who lives in East LA? You can't do this. And the fact that they're even attempting to do, if I'm the U.S. attorney, I am all over that because it's wrong. And I would love to try that case.
Yeah. Well, Kevin Cork, that only means one thing. You must be racist. If Kevin Cork thinks that, sorry, buddy, you must be racist. Anybody who disagrees with reparations is racist. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback, as hard as that may seem at times. Please, please, if you have not signed up to support our show, we are a fan-funded show. And you helping us by subscribing helps us rely less on advertising revenue, which is, I think, a good thing for everybody, right? So you can sign up, $5 a month, UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show for $5. And that's really it. Okay. Nicole, happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone who wished me happy birthday. Yes. There was a lot of people. Very kind people.
People love them some Nicole. All right. We'll see you guys back here, same time, same place tomorrow at noon.